I'm going to talk for a short amount of time this morning. Some different lessons that I had, I kind of assembled those together to put this one together. So if some of this stuff sounds a little familiar, that's probably why. It's probably taken from other lessons that we've talked about before. Self-righteous. You know, it's a word that provokes different emotions in each of us. We think about this word and we think about how it affects our lives. We think about it in others. What does the Bible say about self-righteousness? You know, on the one hand, we don't want to be labeled with that label, do we? We don't want to be labeled as self-righteous. And when we look at different people and we see different people in the world around us, you know, they're very quick to throw this word around. They're very quick to use this word to describe people that would have any sort of moral compass or moral guidance in their lives to say, this is not the type of thing that I want to do. This is not what I want to give my life to. And they may look at you if you take that position and say, you're self-righteous. What is the truth about that? What would the Bible teach us? What would Jesus have us to think about our lives and how we relate to self-righteousness? You know, He went through several parables and different teachings with the apostles to address this very thing. Self-righteousness. Where do we draw that line? What do we do to tell people and to warn people about things in their lives? And what swap of ground do we stand on when we choose to take a stand on these things? It's something each of us has to consider, and it's something each of us should decide for ourselves in our lives and how we're to approach these things. In Luke 18 and verse 9, we have probably one of the more well-known parables that he used to teach on this subject. And beginning there in verse 9, we can read, "And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others." Now you look at that first verse there. The very opening, how he introduced this parable. What did he say? Who was he talking to? He was talking to people that trusted themselves that they were righteous. They trusted in themselves. It didn't say they trusted in God. It didn't say they rested on Christian principles. It didn't say that they did the things that were written in the law. It didn't say any of that. It said they trusted in themselves that they were righteous. And he's talking directly to these people saying, this is not how it works. This is not the kind of life that you want to be, to look at others in a certain way, to raise yourself up as you beat others down. That's not what he was teaching them. As we continue on, it says, "Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood up and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess.' And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." You know, this man had no interest in what others around him did. Again, we're talking about people that trusted in themselves that they were righteous. And as he talks about this publican, he notes that he'd done all these wonderful things. And he'd done these great things. And he said these were for God. And yet he looked at someone else and chose to beat them down in order to make himself feel better about himself. You know, we have to be very careful when we do these types of things. When we talk about things and we want to share with others what God's done for us in our lives, we have to be careful not to look at someone else and say, "Well, you're not as blessed as I am because you don't reverence God like you should." Or all of these different things that would build ourselves up in our own eyes. He's teaching against that in this passage. You know, the most hurtful part of this parable is probably when he singles a publican out and says, "I'm thankful that I'm not like him. I'm thankful that I'm not like him." And going around and looking at others and say, "Man, I got it pretty good because I am not like that guy right there." We can get caught up in thinking that way, can't we? We can look at other people and look at the choices that they've made in their lives. And maybe we can learn lessons from other people's lives, but we shouldn't look at them in a way to look down on them when we do that. We learn from each other's mistakes. You know, if I look through this congregation and I see somebody and I see they've made a mistake and I see the consequences that they've had to face, I probably don't want to make those same mistakes, do I? But it's not up to me to judge that person and say they are less of a person than I am because I happen to make different decisions in my life. That's not what we're to do. What about the good things that this publican had done? He had done some good things, hadn't he? He gave tithes of all that he had. He wasn't an extortioner. He wasn't unjust. He wasn't an adulterer. Those are good things, right? Those are things we would want to avoid. And he points out, I'm not a part of these things. Yet when he looked at the publican, he chose to exalt himself, as it says there in the end of this passage, rather than humbling himself. In Matthew 7 and verse 22, it says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. You see, we can do a lot of good things. We can make a lot of good decisions. But it's still going to come down to what is in your heart. What's the attitude that we have towards serving God? Do we live for God or do we live for self? Do we trust in God or do we trust in ourselves? That's the decision we make. You know, despised is a very strong word, and that's the word that it used when it talked about the publican and how he viewed the Pharisee. He despised him. He felt like he wasn't good enough to even be in his presence. You know, if we've been in the workplace for very long, we've all seen examples of people who can never be happy for anyone. And it's much like the story of the prodigal son. It's another parable that he chose to teach others about these things. In Luke 15, we see this passage. You know, I think Jesus sets this story up perfectly. He talks about things that typically stir emotion in others. When he talks about this son who went to his father and he wants his inheritance. You know, that in and of itself is kind of different. That someone would say, hey, I want to go ahead and get my inheritance so I can get out of here. You know, we look at that and we think, well, why would he want to separate himself from his father? And yet he did. And then they talk about how he squandered that and he just did things that he shouldn't have been doing with it. He used something that should have been a blessing in his life and had turned it into something bad. You know, that stirs us up, doesn't it? When we see people that do those types of things, we think, man, they had every chance in the world and they chose to go down the wrong path. That stirs up a certain amount of emotion in us, doesn't it? In Luke 15, verses 25 through 28, we take a part of this passage. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. Here we see the prodigal sons come back. And his brother's out in the field working. And all of a sudden, he hears all of this jovial things going on. And this music and all everything. It sounds like there's a big occurrence going on back at the house. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. You know, you see this prodigal son come back, and what you would expect is maybe this brother that was separated from his brother, maybe he would have been happy to see him, but he wasn't, was he? He wasn't happy that his father was celebrating his return. He wasn't happy that people were ready to see that brother return. He was angry. Do we see ourselves with those same emotions when we see someone else come back? Do we see ourselves in life when we see somebody that wants to turn and do good, and we choose to be angry about that? Or maybe not even angry. Maybe we're just not that excited about seeing those individuals. We need to entreat people just like the Father did. When they come to dedicate their lives to God and they choose to turn from those things, we need to help them do that. But sometimes we get caught up in our own emotions. You know, in this example, just like the last one, there was no doubt that the older son made some good decisions. He stayed where he was supposed to be. He did the things he was supposed to do. But in the end, it was his attitude toward others that was in the wrong. In 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 3, we see here, "Though I speak with tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth nothing." You see, in here in this passage, they're trying to make the point that there's a better way, there's a different way than things have been done in the past. And it's surrounded by love for one another. It's surrounded by the idea that we all come together with one hope, with one calling, and that's to serve God. And it says in this passage here, it doesn't matter what we've done. It doesn't matter how good we are. It doesn't matter the things that we do if we have not love for one another. It says it is all useless. That's hard for us to believe, isn't it? You know, when we set goals in life and we do the things that are necessary to accomplish those goals, we think, we're done. I did it. I accomplished the goal. But in this case, it makes a lot of difference what our attitude is. Can we read others' hearts? Can we do all of these things? And the answer is no, we can't do that. And we can do a lot of things right and still not be right in the eyes of God. In Isaiah 65, verses 1 through 5, it says, "I am sought of them that asked not for me. I am found of them that sought me not. I said, behold me, unto a nation that was not called by my name. I have spread out my hands all the day unto a rebellious people, which walketh in a way that was not good after their own thoughts. A people that provoketh me to anger continually to my face, that sacrificeth in gardens and burneth incense upon altars of brick, which remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments, which eat swine's flesh, and broth of abominable things is their vessels, which say, stand by thyself, come not near to me, for I am holier than thou. These are a smoke in my nose and a fire that burneth all the day." You know, it starts talking really seriously about these types of individuals. The types that says, in this case, it says, stand not near to me. I am holier than thou. You know, they weren't doing things right in this instance, were they? They were eating of swine. They were eating of things that they weren't, of meats that they weren't supposed to be eating of. And this is in the Old Testament. They were burning incense on altars of brick, and those were supposed to be made of wood. You know, they weren't doing things right. And yet they were saying, I am holier than thou. You know, that attitude we start to see is not something that God wishes for. It's not something that he likes. And it says these people were a smoke in his nose that burneth all the day. Strong words to describe how he felt about these individuals. And the self-righteous attitude is exactly what drove him to look at them this way. In Matthew 9, verses 10 through 13, it says, "And it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, Why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. And I've seen this passage used a lot of times for people, you know, maybe wanting to do things that aren't necessarily on the up and up, and they'll read this passage and say, see, God, you know, Jesus was a partier. You know, I've actually heard somebody say that. That is not what this passage is teaching, not even close. What he's talking about is people that do need Jesus, that do need a change of heart. And it's talking about Jesus and treating those people and ministering to those people. You know, when we read in that first part, it wasn't like he sought these people out. You know, many times we saw that, even with the woman in the well, at the well. You know, he came across these people and he crossed paths with them in their lives, and he always taught them. But now they're looking at him and they're saying, you see there, he's sitting over there with sinners. He's eating, drinking with sinners. You know, if we're going to help people, we have to be involved with them. We have to be involved in their lives. But what it doesn't say was he participated with those things that they were accusing him of. He didn't participate in those things. The involvement he had in their lives was showing them that there was a different way, that there was a way to give their lives to God and to live for him. In Matthew 23, verses 12 and 13, it says, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. You know, when we take that attitude, we shut that door on those people, don't we? We say we want them to come to God, and we want to give them their lives to God, but we, through our actions, may actually drive them away from God. We have to think about when people cross paths with us in our lives, do we make them better or do we make them worse off? Because we can do either through our actions. We have to consider this anytime anyone confides in us. Our actions will do those things. We'll either bring them closer to God or we'll drive them away. In Matthew 23 and verse 15, it says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. You see, these individuals were actually worse off by coming in contact with these people than when they began. He said, you made them twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. They were actually worse off by coming in contact with these people. That shouldn't be the case with us. When we interact with people, our light should show, they should see Christ in us. And when they interact with us, they should be better off, not worse. They should look at our lives and see someone that chooses to live for God and hopefully choose to do the same for themselves. In our invitation, what do we invite people to? Every service we have, we invite people, you know, come if you want to be baptized. What are we inviting people to? Are we inviting them to a life of dealing with people that are self-righteous? Of dealing with people that look down on them? We hope that's not the case. That's not the way it's supposed to be. We invite them to dedicate their lives to God and come to a group of people that want to support them in doing that. You know, it's easy to think that, well, you know, somebody comes forward and they say that they're going to be a child of God and they do the right things and then they're up and going and they never make another mistake. You know, that's probably not right in our own lives. It's probably not going to be right with someone that chooses to do that late in life. Mistakes may be made. And we need to be willing to help people with those things. People can get the idea when they do that and they choose to interact with us and they choose to be a part of God's people, they can maybe decide, well, I guess I just can't be forgiven, because if these are God's people and they're doing the things that God would have them to do and they're treating me this way, then maybe I'm just not meant to be forgiven. And we would never want someone to believe that. In James 3, verses 17 and 18, it says, "But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." How can we read these passages and get any idea that we're here to punish others? It's not our job to punish others. That part is reserved for God. God will make that judgment call on people, and it's up to them. If we want people to be a part of us and a part of God's people, then we need to concentrate on helping them get their lives right and not holding them down. We talk about following the Word of God, but you simply won't find anything in His Word to justify a self-righteous attitude. Rather, we find just the opposite, that this type of attitude, whether shown in actions or through private feelings, is strongly warned against. You know, we've got examples of this. In James 2 and verse 13, it says, For he shall have judgment without mercy that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. I can't speak for everybody here. I can't. But when I think about me and my life, and I think about the scales that maybe, you know, we think about judgment in terms of scales. When I think about the scales that I want measuring my life, I want that mercy side just as heavy as I can get it. I want there to be no way that that scale is going to tip the other way. When I look at someone else's life, do I try to tip that scale in their favor maybe? Maybe show them a little bit more mercy? You know, I heard someone say one time, you know, if I'm going to err, I hope it's on the side of mercy. And that's how our lives should be. If we're going to err, it ought to be on the side of mercy. Because we're not here to deal justice. That's not our job. We don't want that job. And I assure you, you don't want that job. That job's left up to God. He can decide whether or not their life outweighs that scale of mercy. But to show mercy is not good enough. In Romans 12, verses 8 through 10, it says, "Or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. He that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another." Now, what do we see in this passage when it talks about mercy? It says mercy with cheerfulness. Where else do we find that idea, with cheerfulness? It's in giving, isn't it? When it addresses the idea that we're to give, it says with cheerfulness, not begrudging. And that's the way it should be in this case. It's the same idea. We know when whatever we choose to give back to God, it's to be with cheerfulness. We're not supposed to hold a grudge about that. We're not supposed to hate the fact that we're having to do it. We're not supposed to have somebody prying it out of our hands. It's to be with cheerfulness. And it's the same idea with mercy. When we deal with others, when we deal with a merciful, it should be with a good attitude. And it should be with cheerfulness. We should do it for the right reason. We need to help show mercy and help others with their sin. And that's the idea. Not that we would begrudge them for the things that they've done, but show mercy for the fact that they've done them. In Luke 6, verses 35 through 38, it says, "But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. Be merciful, as your Father is merciful. Forgive, and it shall be forgiven." Now, we talked about being merciful and helping others. How can we help others without being judgmental? How do you do that? You know, it kind of puts us in a hard position, doesn't it? Because we don't want to seem like we're justifying the things that people have done. We don't want to do that. And sometimes we draw that line really hard in the sand. Now, you've got to know that the things you've done are terrible. But on the other hand, we know we're supposed to be merciful. So how do you balance the two? You know, it comes down to fact versus judgment a lot of times. In our court system, no matter how you feel about it, you have two groups. Attorneys that are supposed to represent the facts in a case, and the judge or the jury that's supposed to make a judgment based on those facts. You know, when you look at those situations and you look and you see somebody and maybe they've come to you and they want help with this sin, or maybe we know that someone that we love has committed this sin and lives in this sin and we want to help them with that. How do we do that without being judgmental? You know, if they've come to us and they've told us they have that sin in their lives, or we know it to be occurring, then that's a fact. Now, how we look at that in their lives can be judgmental. If we look at that individual and say, that's just the way they are, that's the things that they do, and they're going to burn for it, that's very judgmental, isn't it? We're taking the position that's reserved for God. That's not our job. Our job is to help that individual. And we should do anything that we can to help that individual. Judgment comes in when we try to ascertain people's intentions, doesn't it? When we try to say, well, they do that and that's just how they are and they just want to... Those are all judgmental statements, aren't they? They just want to... They're just that way. We start passing judgment, don't we? And we need to reserve that for God. Because God can read hearts and we cannot. And that's where we get to having a real problem. We don't have that ability. But we start to make those statements and we put ourselves in a place that we shouldn't be. In this situation, the merciful thing to do would be to come to me in love if I'm that individual. It encouraged me to make a change in my life. And the key here is to be doing it in love, as we've seen from various passages this morning. Galatians 6, verses 1 through 2 says, brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, how could I bear your burden if admitting you were overtaken with a sin were passing judgment? We talked about that balance. If I'm to entreat you and to help you through that, if I can't say anything is wrong, how can I help you? Because we have to admit at some point that there's a problem there. And how can I properly help you if we can't say, this is something that has to change in your life. This is something that has to change in my life if I'm that individual. You see, there are two sides to this thing, and there has to be a balance there in always knowing that God's judgment is reserved for Him. You know, it quickly becomes evident that our attitude determines whether we're dealing in fact or judgment, and as we've discussed this morning, our attitude should be merciful. In addressing situations such as these, if we do it with any other motive but love, we too would be in the wrong. We would be in the wrong by doing that if it weren't out of love. In the congregation here and in the church as a whole, we're not perfect people, are we? We're just not. We make mistakes. We do things that we know we shouldn't. And we know we need God's mercy to overcome that. You know, let's make up our minds today that we'll have a merciful attitude when dealing with others, and our motives will be based on love. You know, we talked about what are we inviting people to. When we offer that invitation, what are we inviting them to? You know, we're inviting them to the chance to be made perfect in the eyes of God through Jesus' blood. That's the offer that we're making. And it's our job to support that mission for the church so that people can make their lives right with God and they can choose to serve Him and have those sins forgiven through Jesus' blood. These are the thoughts of the morning. I hope they've been helpful. I hope maybe throughout the week when we come in these situations where people use those terms such as self-righteousness and being judgmental, I hope we can see the difference between the two. And when we strive to help people, that we do it out of love and not for a chance to hold other people back.